I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars, and this week, Goldie-looking chain.
I think that anyone that denies the talents of disco music should be put down.
Look, I feel backed into a corner here, but I mean, I love disco music.
I think it's awesome.
Who doesn't?
Well, a lot of people don't. I think I know that
people in the early 80s didn't, but it was mainly a sort of, or a late 70s, I suppose. It was a reaction, wasn't it?
Yeah, people were bored of it.
I could see how it would get irritating. I mean, the thing that tarred disco music for me a little bit was student nights in the 90s.
What, with afro wigs?
Yeah, afro, I know. Actually, yeah, sort of quite tiresome and very sweaty.
But I was just about to say exceptionally sweaty, and that was when you could still do indoor smoking, so it was that they used to come back smelling absolutely appalling, like a sheep that had cigarettes stubbed out on it. It was awful. Awful. Awful.
But that's not to denigrate disco music itself, which is excellent. Mostly.
No, I absolutely love disco. If I could go back to a time, you know, people always say, oh, if you could go back to an era, what would it be? I'd say, well, I'd like to have been of going out age in disco, you know, like late, say, 76, being able to go out from 76 to 80.
Well, yeah, but then are you saying you'd like to have been of going out age but still where you grew up?
Oh, gosh, you always muddy the waters now, don't you?
Well, no, just because what I think you're thinking of and I'm thinking of is Studio 54 and the glory days of true disco in New York, whereas, in fact, you're from Somerset. And I think that the disco scene may have been a little different, as it would have been for me growing up in Cheshire.
I think the disco scene would have been delayed to the point where I would have been waiting for it and would have been, hang on, I thought around 77, 78, disco was stronger. Oh, no, it didn't come to Somerset until 82. Oh, shit.
Now, because I was going to say, yeah, we didn't get disco in Wilmslow until about 1984, but that's not true, because we were sort of in the shadow of Manchester, which is obviously quite cutting edge when it comes to music.
Yeah.
And I remember as a teenager, in the height of sort of baggy and then into Madchester.
It was
where sort of guitar music fused with dance music and it all became more interesting. And so we'd got, like, the Stone Roses were already a thing, but also just lots of other kind of bands that have been and gone. And the brief resurgence of flared trousers,
Paisley shirts.
I
do remember the renaissance of the flares, because a fashionable kid in our village who was a really talented skateboarder, around the late, it would have been late 80s, 89.
You can't skateboard in flares. The aero's all wrong, surely.
He skateboarded in corduroy flares. And we kind of laughed at first, but little did we realise.
Could you hear him coming? Because it would go...
Oh, yeah, there was some serious... You know, it's like a car on the motorway. It's usually around summer when people are going on holiday and someone's wrapped up something in a massive tarpaulin. when they possibly didn't need to, and they, what they don't realise is the paint of their car is being flailed for the entire journey, and they get to the destination and the thing inside the bag is okay, but the roof is just primer of their car. It's just in primer. In fact, I saw a car on a trailer once that was wrapped in a tarpaulin, which is a really bad idea, listeners. You shouldn't do that. It's much easier to get it wet and then it dry really quickly.
And, yeah, cars are generally pretty weatherproof, aren't they, if they've got the windows
in? Well, even
if
they're not. I mean, I've had windowless cars, but you still would not put a tarp around it, because the problem is the tarp acts as a very aggressive, abrasive / flail mower when you get to about 60 miles an hour. I actually can't remember why I started talking about it.
Come for the idle chat about flared trousers, stay for the practical car transport advice.
Yeah, do not tarp a car when you're trailering it. It's a bad idea. Or a suitcase on the roof of a car.
I was going to say, on the note of flares and paisley shirts and things that came with a sort of baggy thing, because that all did start happening in Manchester and in the Northwest in 88, 89.
Yeah.
And I remember in about 1990 going to see some friends of my parents in Nottinghamshire. And they hadn't got any of these things.
No.
Like, they felt like they were just sort of behind a bit. And it was the first time I went, oh, shit, actually, we live quite close to a scene. A scene is happening under our noses and we don't even know it.
Exactly.
We were 15.
And there is no internet.
And there's no internet, yeah, and that's it. And it was all, but, you know, there was once my mate Rob Jackson's older brother was walking down the street in Manchester in a Stone Roses T-shirt, and Ian Brown leant out of the back window of a limo and shouted, hey, at him because he saw his T-shirt. And it was like the most exciting news we'd ever had pretty much in history.
that's quite cool.
I mean, it is quite cool,
that.
Yeah.
I like that. I'm trying to think of if I've got an equivalent claim.
Of course, we had a more authentic Mancunian experience when we went up to Manchester for your birthday, the load of us, to play Crystal Maze. Because remember, we were walking down Deansgate on the way to the Crystal Maze experience.
Yes.
Do you remember this? And there was a guy at the traffic lights in a car with the windows down. He was playing music quite loudly. And that group of lads who were behind us, one of them just went, oi, knobhead, turn your music down. It's shite.
That's right. I forgot about that. Knobhead.
I haven't heard knobhead for years. Well, since I moved away from near Manchester, I guess. But yeah, knobhead in a Manc accent is a beautiful thing.
Oi. It's very nasal, isn't it? Oi,
yeah,
knobhead.
Oi, knobhead.
That's great. I love that. I totally forgot about that. That was a very, very fun weekend. Gosh, it seems like a very long time ago.
That was the pure concentrated Manc moment. It made me quite, not homesick, but nostalgic for the area that I grew up in. Because I've never heard anyone shout, oi, knobhead, at a car at traffic lights in London.
Do you listen to music that's centric around the area you grew up, though, and then get all dewy-eyed? Or just for generally proud,
particularly, but yeah, well, kind of, yeah.
In the same way that, say, if I was Welsh, I would just constantly listen to the Manic Street Preachers, and even if it was a sunny, happy
Stereophonics.
Day, and Stereophonics, yeah. Even if it was a sunny, happy day.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I mean, I do listen to a lot of Northwestern music, but just because the Northwest makes lots of really good music. If I was just listening to, like, New Order, one of my favourite bands, they had a new song out last week, which actually is a bit. A mutual friend of ours, I was talking to him about it because he's really into music, and he described it perfectly. He said, we both agreed we quite liked the new New Order song, but that he said it sounds like it's modern New Order created by an algorithm, because it's just, it's got all the elements, like there's nothing really surprising about it. But they are still a fantastic band, and some bits of them do make me think of like the Northwest. But I always get a bit when people go, oh yeah, the famous Manchester band Joy Division, who later became New Order, and you go, not true Manchester band, because two of them are from Salford and the other two were from Macclesfield.
Oh.
And Macclesfield isn't even in Greater Manchester, so
it's
you
not,
know
no.
Macclesfield's near where I grew up, so
yeah.
Also, if you've ever been to Macclesfield, this is the second week in a row we've mentioned Macclesfield on the podcast, because I mentioned it last week about Fred Dibner. But, yeah, if you ever go to Macclesfield, I think Joy Division makes a lot more sense. The sound of Joy Division, because it's the sound of a sort of small, formerly industrial town.
I was going to say it's the downtrodden,
but nestling on
industrial
the edge.
Revolution town, isn't it?
Yeah,
from,
sort of all
the
old
70s.
All the old chimneys and stuff, and where they used to.
Well, if Fred Dibner hadn't kicked them all down,
kicked them all down.
Yeah,
powerful man. But then you've got these incredible views across to the Pennines, and it's sort of quite epic landscape around it. So
what would you listen to if you were driving through it now, Richard? What would you listen to?
Joy Division.
To?
Yeah,
would
Joy
you?
Division. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Not
a
New
Joy
Order.
Makes,
it would be Joy Division.
Yeah, Joy Division sounds like Macclesfield to me. It, weirdly, and I know that's a weird thing to say, but it just sounds like Mac.
Okay.
I don't know. Mac's quite good these days. Because when I go back up to the Northwest, a mate of mine lives near there, and we usually go out for a drink in Macclesfield, and there's loads of nice little pubs and things that have been kind of rejuvenated, and some good restaurants, so you get a good curry and all that. This used to be a car podcast.
Well, I was going to say, I didn't want to disturb your dewy-eyed nostalgia.
Yeah, yeah. I might dub on a ticking clock over that bit, so it sounds like I'm sitting in an armchair by a fire. Come on, gather around as I tell you a little bit more about the town of Macclesfield. What was I going to talk to you about? I know. I have some questions for you because of some enigmatic texts that you sent me recently. The first one is you just sent me a message out of the blue last week or the week before saying...
What did I say?
Ask me about Kestrel Super Strength, Airwolf TVR Man and Mondeo Dez.
Oh, yeah.
And basically writing in code. I don't understand.
I was on a journey and I used the voice activation on my phone as a note maker. And the guy I was telling you about, it was the same piece of road that when we talked about last week about that guy with no trousers on walking at the side of the road with just smart shoes on and no actual trousers. The same piece of road, okay. I was driving down to my folks' place in Somerset where I did the podcast last week in the home county, and I was driving my wife's Nissan Figaro because I had to take it down there for some filming. That's the longest journey that the Figaro's ever done by quite a long way, so really? it's not like I didn't trust it, but I had packed a comprehensive toolkit in it. And it's also, as I said before, it's chronically low geared for city Tokyo,
yes,
spec.
Yes, I remember.
Use.
Yeah.
So driving it on the motorway is a commitment. And
remind me, that is a 3-speed auto in that, isn't it?
It's 3-speed, but it's the ratios of said 3 speeds. It's at 62 miles an hour, so 100 kilometres, it's doing 4,000 RPM. And so if you try and nudge it up to 70, it honestly sounds like you're going to get conrods, you're going to get valves, you're going to get cams just flying.
So top gear in that car is 15 miles an hour per 1,000 revs.
Yeah.
That is quite low.
It's very low. I mean, and which is why it's a perfect town car. So I thought, I'm not going to drive it at more than 4,000 RPM because I've had the engine rebuilt before and it wasn't pleasant. And what I did do, and this is something I don't normally do, is I took with me some earphones and I put them on and I was listening to the radio through earphones.
Uh-huh.
And it was quite nice, actually. They weren't really tight earphones. I don't do earbuds because they don't stay in my ears. My ears are the wrong design. And the reason why I sent you that message is because Airwolf TVR guy, did I say? I can't remember what I wrote.
It's Kestrel Super Strength,
yes.
Airwolf TVR Man and Mondeo Dez.
So all on this sort of 20 minutes of driving in this segment, I had a guy at the fuel station pull up really aggressively, and he was like a sort of older guy that looked like he'd seen some pub fights, and his car was absolutely flawless Mondeo ST200, was it?
Yeah, the blue one.
The blue one, it was blue, yeah. And the number plate was just something something Dez. And he looked like a proper Dez. He looked like he might have carried a flick knife in the 70s, you know?
But the Mondeo was immaculate.
The Mondeo was absolutely flawless, so it was worshipped. So I chuckled about that because I thought, yeah, Dez, like a bloke called Dez or Mondeo Dez, it just works, doesn't it?
Mondeo Dez. You don't get people called Dez anymore. I mean, you do, but you can't imagine you go and see someone's new baby and go, have you decided on a name yet? Yes, we're going to call him Dez.
You don't,
baby,
do you?
Dez. It's just faded away without any ceremony, you know.
Totally.
There's certain names that people, sometimes the newspapers or someone will make a bit of a fuss and go, did you know there was only one baby called Nigel christened last year or whatever?
Yeah.
But Dez has been allowed to slip away.
There's no Dez. So I chuckled about that. And then as I was driving with these earphones on, just taking it easy, trucking nice and slow, this guy came past me in a TVR, and I've totally forgotten what model it is. It's one of the, would it be the 80s ones that I don't particularly like the look of, with the backlights from a Capri, or they look like the backlights from a Capri. I can't remember what.
They were SD1 lights on them. But upside down.
But upside down. Okay, so what was that?
A 350? No, it'd be a 350 or a 380.
Yeah, 350. Okay, 350. He came past me, okay, but he only came past quite slowly.
Mm.
And he was wearing what I can only describe as helicopter pilot earphones with a mouthpiece. Full. I mean, honestly, it was amazing. It was amazing. He was wearing full helicopter pilot head comms gear. And this thing was loud because I could hear it through my headphones. And he went past me slowly and then sped up. But what was cool was a bit of a tortoise and hare. I ended up going past him in some traffic when it all got a bit congested. And we smiled at one another because I'd totally forgotten I was wearing headphones for the first time in a car ever because I was listening to my radio app. And he just looked like someone from Airwolf. I mean, it was ridiculous. But his car was so loud.
Did he have the roof down, or was this a convertible, a coupe?
It was a convertible with the roof up.
Ah.
But it was, I mean, it was so loud. And
I was going to say, when you said a man driving a TVR with helicopter, gunship, spec, headphones and mouthpiece,
it's amazing.
I was going to say, what an arse. And then I suddenly thought, I'm not going to call this guy an arse because he might be listening. After the experience of talking about a neighbour's car and then finding out that one of her friends listens to the show and has pieced it all together.
Yeah, that
to
was
my embarrassment.
That was amazing.
I'm not gonna start willy nilly describing TVR drivers as anything.
This could become a worry for us because Mondeo Des is going to roll up his sleeves and come around my house and give me a hiding.
Well, I'd like to hear from Mondeo Des just to hear more about his Mondeo because it sounds tidy.
Would you call him Mondeo? What about Mondes? Could you call
Mondes?
Him
Mondes? The Mondezo.
Mondezo, yeah, because he obviously loves his high performance Mondeos, hence the purchase.
Yeah.
Well, so that was Airwolf TVR guy, which I just chuckled about. But then I thought, actually, it probably makes perfect sense. I bet it's rigged up to a Bluetooth headpiece as well, so he can take calls.
Yeah, well, that'd be it. I was told recently that there's a forthcoming very high-performance car from a well-known manufacturer, which is so noisy inside that they're going to have to sell it with those kind of headphones.
Really?
Branded up, yeah.
And then and the Kestrel thing was when in amongst the traffic when I saw TVR Airwolf guy, of which the problem is then I got an earworm and I started to sing to myself the Airwolf theme tune because you just can't resist it. It's just that addictive. There was a delivery curtain-sided lorry with Kestrel Super Strength Lager adverts all over it.
Right.
And I thought, if you're going to sell a beer, a lager, which is a bit too strong for its own good,
yeah.
Why would you name it after quite a cool bird of prey? I'm just trying to work out why. Why was that a good idea? Kestrel.
Well,
do you think of a Kestrel as being a bit of a, you know, bit hard, trying on a bit of a seasoned drinker? What?
It gives it a certain majesty. And also, they have a sort of beady-eyed thuggishness about them, Birds of Prey, don't they? So, also, there was normal Kestrel as well, I think, wasn't there? Kestrel was a whole sort of family of beer.
I think Kestrel is a family of beer, but the Super Strength
still
is where they just wound it up. They just put the boost, they put an extra couple of bar of boost into it.
Yeah.
Didn't they? So that's the thing. I just don't understand why you'd name a disgustingly strong lager after a Bird of Prey. Especially a Kestrel, because that's quite a small bird of prey in the world of birds of prey.
Yeah, eagle and all those, the bigger ones would have been better. Buzzard super
exactly,
strength.
Exactly, buzzard.
That sounds a bit ratty somehow, buzzard. I mean,
buzzard sounds like it's going to make your head, you'll have to shudder your head after every sip. You know, sends you to the, you know what I mean? You're doing it. I can see you doing it while you're talking to me. So that was that.
There we go. Now, I have to. The other thing, which I think you mentioned on Twitter last week, which was that you've got a story involving. Was this Max Power when you had. There's a car, the band Goldie Looking Chain, and a terrible write off.
Oh,
would
yeah.
These be the main component parts of this?
Well, yeah, I'm going to shamelessly plug my YouTube channel here because the current video as I speak to you is one of an old electric motorcycle which I bought and consequently got introduced to Charlie Borman. as you do, who's about to release his series of riding a really long way with Ewan McGregor. That's not
what is it now? It's a long way up this time,
isn't
it?
Long way up, yeah.
I know a couple of people who've worked on that, and
it looks
quite a good
brilliant.
Time doing it. Yeah. And what next, though? He said he's done long way down, long way round, long way up. That's it. He's out of long way out, where he tries to ride a motorcycle to the moon. Might be the only course of action
left. I thought
you
meant across the sea with the paddle.
Long way out.
You know, they just go. They start at the coast, the seaside, low tide. Mm. Like, let's say Western Supermare. And him and Ewan, they just have to pin the throttle and they just have to, like, count. All the crowd just count. And they go, right, if you can do it more than a minute without sinking, brilliant. There's no chance of ever getting to France. In fact, you're going the wrong way if you're going to Western Supermare anyway. But you know what I mean? So I think long way out would be just ride a motorbike across the water. Go.
Long way out is, riding out to sea. So long way off is he's fired towards the moon on a motorcycle.
That's a long way. Yeah, that is a long way out. Yes.
I mean, he has quite crazy eyes at the best of times. Imagine his eyes when he's being launched off the surface of the Earth by a rocket-powered motorcycle.
Charlie's eyes would be incredible.
Incredible.
In fact, who needs Charlie's Angels when you've just got Charlie's eyes?
Charlie's eyes. But do you remember when BMW put that sort of ring of light around the four round lamps as their
the angel eyes.
The angel eyes, but then no car manufacturer followed it with the Charlie's eyes, which was modelled on incredibly big headlights, slightly scary.
I think we've said this before in a previous video or a podcast, but you know when you try and have a stare off with somebody, I do it with my kids if you try and have a stare off without blinking or laughing. Imagine Carl Fogarty and Charlie Borman having a stare off.
Oh my god.
It would just be motorcyclist laser eye off. It would be measurable. They'd burn one another. One of them would burn from the intensity of the stare.
I was going to say that only ends when one of them melts.
I think that's
going on for days.
I think Fogarty's eyes could damage someone. He could look too much at someone and can damage them. I'm convinced.
But he has rather sort of kestrel-like eyes, doesn't he? He could have been the spokesperson for Kestrel Super Strength, because he also has super strength.
The spokesperson for a really strong, fighty lager. I just can't imagine.
When he's a high-performance motorcyclist as well. I mean, there's some PR issues around that, but the idea of a kestrel-eyed man promoting Kestrel is compelling nonetheless. And they just have to put a line in at the end of the advert where he just went something like, "Now remember, I never ride when I'm shit-faced. And trust me, this stuff gets you proper walloped."
Oh, can we just do the advert for it, even if it doesn't happen? Should we just volunteer to make an advert? We just think it would be amazing. It would just be so good. It would be Carl Fogarty, like, riding flat out across some Yorkshire moors, obviously no helmet or pads, because he's probably got a shirt that's slightly unbuttoned, and he's and you know like a trophy truck where the suspension's doing all the work but the body's just staying dead flat.
Yeah.
That's what Fogarty would be like. Anyway, he's going
what,
so
was like
fast.
A really low helicopter tracking shot alongside him, and he's just like crouched down, hair swooped back by the wind. But the wheels are just going up and down on this undulating Yorkshire road.
Oh, it'd be amazing.
But it's he's almost eerily like a- still.
Yeah, it's almost like those spoofy Old Spice adverts which came out a couple of years ago, which were brilliant.
Yes. And, oh, hey, we don't even need to commission some music for it, because
use the Airwolf music.
All right, I'm Carl Fogarty. Where's Carl Fogarty from? I can't even remember.
Isn't he from Lancaster? Is he Lancastrian?
Yeah, I think he might be.
Lancashire? Yeah. Yeah, most motorcyclists are from the north, from the north of England. I don't know if it's something in the water, but we need to make that happen, man. I think he's the face and the sound of Kestrel.
Oh,
Kestrel
hey.
Lager. Yes.
Talking of Lancastrians, we've got a bit of follow up on last week's show. Someone on Twitter sent me a link to the original BBC show that made Fred Dibner, a TV star, which was just sort of a fly on the wall thing, watching him bring down a chimney. And there was just an 8-minute clip that the Beeb had put online.
Yeah.
Because it was in a sort of on this day in 1979, I think it was. And it's just watching Fred Dibner.
Good
bring
year,
a
fine it's year.
Absolutely fantastic. And then somebody else put the link to the full show, which is on YouTube. So if people are interested in more Fred Dibner, and you should be, because it was wonderful. I was talking, as we were earlier, about getting misty eyed about things
Dibner
from your childhood. I watched 8 minutes of Dibner, and it was just like, it was like being a kid again, because I remember watching those shows when I was little, and it was so gentle, and he's so brilliant. It's well worth seeking out. A Lancastrian man dismantling a chimney, because he didn't blow this one up. He's just taking it down brick by brick from the top.
Really? Just with a chisel and a hammer?
Yeah, and it's him alone. He's got a mate who's down the bottom, and there's a brilliant bit. In the 8-minute clip, there's a brilliant bit about why he explains it, because his mate's an older bloke, and he's going, well, you can't have these young lads, because, you know, girl walks past, they're off, you know, they're not looking out for you. Or they're off, you know, they're feeling a bit rough because they've had a big night the night before. Well, Ernie's teetotal, so that's not a problem. You know, and it's the whole thing is great. I would urge you to watch it. The other thing we need to follow
up on... And if you've never
on,
heard of Fred Dibner, Google him and watch this. You'll get an idea of what we are talking about, because he was a very eccentric but utterly British man.
Yeah,
for good and fantastic. For bad, I suppose.
I saw someone else pointing out, making a good point, that in a way he's sort of the spirit of Fred Dibner lives on in Guy Martin.
Oh, and completely. I can see that. Completely.
I hadn't really thought about it before, but it's absolutely right. You do see the crossover.
Yeah, when I first saw Guy Martin on TV with the boat that Guy built, I immediately went, it's Dibner reincarnated. If he's interested in Industrial Revolution machinery and maybe wartime paraphernalia, that's Dibner. He just happens to be, but whereas Dibner was quite sort of slow and, you know, stocky and sooty, Guy Martin is sooty, but he's fit as a fiddle, and he obviously can ride a motorbike around the Isle of Man TT without dying. So
I don't think Guy Martin's sooty. I think he's oily.
Oh, do you?
Well, he's always under a lorry, isn't he?
When he's
not riding a motorbike, he's just under a lorry.
And when I'm under a car, I always catch the sort of bridge of my nose on the bell housing or something. So I've got a stripe. I've got like a crappy badger's stripe of mud, oily or mud on my nose bridge. And you know what I look like? I look like the sort of twat that's about to go and do a paintball mission. But he hasn't quite put his war paint on properly.
Oh, right. I thought you were going to say you look like a negative image of Adamant.
Adamant, yeah. Talking of 1979, that's pure Adamant era, isn't it?
Yeah.
Didn't Adamant only have one good song? Because Stand and Deliver was good, but the other one wasn't.
Well, Prince Charming?
Yeah, it was rubbish.
That was all right. Ant Music, that was all right.
Was it, though?
It's catchy.
Yeah, I'm not convinced it was very good. Mm. Stand and Deliver. He can have that. That's good. But the other one, didn't he get institutionalised quite recently?
Well, in this century, definitely he's had some troubles. Yeah, I think he at one point, it's the most bizarre thing.
Did he throw a disc brake through a window of a pub or something?
Something mad like that. Yeah, but he also went into the there's a charity shop not far from where I live, actually, in Kentish Town, and there's this charity shop that's for the, you know, sort of Diane Fossey gorilla rescue type stuff, and it was near where he lived,
right?
And he went in there and became obsessed by it. I might be misremembering some details here, but the gist was
obsessed.
that he became obsessed because he kept walking past this shop. He became obsessed with the gorillas, and he ended up like writing a song about rescuing gorillas and trying to give all the money to gorilla rescue. And they were a bit like, "Please leave us alone, Adamant." And
what?
Then he threw a disc brake through a pub window or whatever.
we've definitely got sidetracked. We've definitely got sidetracked now.
Oh, so
I was supposed to be talking to you about the Goldie looking chain.
Oh yeah. Well, hang on, hold that thought. I was just going to say, while we're rounding up from stuff from last week, Matra Rancho news.
Oh, never bored.
One of the two ranchos for sale in Britain has now sold, it seems. The white one has gone, but that orangey one we were talking about last week is, as far as I know, last I looked, it was still, that was still for sale, if anyone wants to pay 15 grand for a Rancho.
They do, and then, they need to then let us drive it extensively.
Yes.
Please.
So, but then that guy sent you scans of two Rancho brochures, which you passed on to me, which were absolutely fantastic.
Oh, yeah, he did. Yeah, thank you for that. I need to find his name.
Bertie Redfern.
God,
I've got it here.
You've got it written down already, you absolute... Yeah.
But there's two Rancho brochures, and I remember having both of them when I was a kid, when I was trying to persuade my dad we should get a Rancho, and he said, well, no, it's not. It's silly, because it's not practical, because it's only two-door, and it pretends to be four-wheel drive, and it's not. It's a fake, and, you know. My dad had got its number, but I think he was missing the incredible attraction of a Rancho to a six-year-old child, so... we had all the brochures, but no actual Rancho. And I realised from looking at these brochures that when I said the orange one for sale, I was trying to tempt you because it had got a factory fit tow bar. I'd forgotten. All of them did. It was standard fit.
Tow bar was standard fit.
Tow bar was standard in Britain, certainly. This tow bar was standard. Because the interesting thing about the Rancho, in Britain at least, was it was just one trim level. There was no farting about. As far as I can see from the brochures, there were no options, really, except early ones didn't have a radio. You had to fit it yourself. But, yeah, it just came as it was.
I love that.
And that included the tow bar.
I'm trying not to talk much about Ranchos, because every time we do, it plants a seed in my head as to why I want one.
Well.
And what I could do with it.
But... I can't believe the reaction we had to talk about, because I thought they're super obscure and that no one would really care. But we've had loads of communications on social media about Ranchos, because there's one that I realised only belatedly after we were talking last week separately about the Rancho and the Zara Picasso is that they were actually designed by the same bloke.
Were they?
Or at least, well, near as damn it, I don't know that he...
That's brilliant.
He was definitely responsible for all of the Zara Picasso, because he did the...
was his name called? Ronald Pickering?
No. No. No, his name was Antonis Valanis. He was Greek, and he worked for Matra, where he designed the Rancho and the Marina... apparently, sports car.
Okay, yeah.
And then he went to Citroën. He did the Zane concept car, which was basically the Zara Picasso. It's what became the Zara Picasso. So, yeah,
I did not know that. That's a cool thing.
Yeah. But then the Rancho information just gets better and better. Somebody pointed out that one of the lead characters in Brookside, whose name I've now forgotten, had one when Brookside started
off,
and then replaced it with a Frontera. So,
well,
yeah.
To people who aren't based in the UK listening to this, there's so much confusion. Fred Dibner, Matra Rancho, which might not translate very well, and then Brookside, a very, very lesser-known soap opera, TV.
Yeah, well, it was quite big in its day, but...
When did it stop? In the 90s?
Well, I reckon it soldiered on into the 2000s.
Do you?
Yeah.
Shall I look it up?
In a sort of undignified way, where they probably just started putting really massive scandals in to try and spice things up to no avail. But
I remember the music was really... I quite like... I'm going to say this. I was young and silly. I quite like the music.
I don't remember it being a classic.
It was a classic. Am I allowed to play it or not?
No.
Because of stuff. 2003, Rich.
Yeah,
1982 to 2003. God, that's a lot of scandal and shouting and love and hate that might have.
But
gone
not
on.
A lot of Ranchos, by the sound of it, because it got replaced by a Frontera. So, but anyway, the single most extraordinary Rancho fact that has come out of the last week since we talked about the Rancho.
Go on, then.
Previous podcast.
Go. Tell me.
Is that? Top celebrity Rancho owner, not the guy off Brookside, Lulu.
What? Lulu, Lady Singer Lulu?
Lady Singer Lulu had a Rancho and she crashed it head on into a Capri one night whilst coming back from performing in Margate.
Seriously?
Extraordinary.
Wow.
Lulu had a Rancho. And to me, I thought, that's quite interesting that I sort of feel like that suggests that the Rancho was, you know, quite...
Exotic?
Seen as quite exotic and posh and cool. And I mean, I don't know that. I mean, I'm trying to think, what would you think Lulu would? I'd assume that in the late 70s, Lulu would drive a Mini because.
But she did that. Did she have children, or has she had children?
I don't know, actually.
Because maybe it's her. Because don't forget, we've said this before, it predates the Land Rover Discovery, but it kind of was the Freelander or Discovery before they existed.
Mm.
And so, without the 4x4-ness, which most people don't even use anyway.
True.
So,
well, particularly if you've got a Freelander 1 now, because chances are the reduction drive's broken and you've had to take it off. So a lot of Freelander 1 are just front-wheel drive now anyway.
That's just brilliant. She had a head-on collision and she's not dead in a rancher.
No, well, so someone on Twitter had found the newspaper cutting about this from the Daily Mail, back when it was a newspaper, and it showed the Rancho really quite scrunched up, but not totally destroyed. She got out with sort of cuts and bruises, and then they found a stock photo, you know, from a photo library of the actual Capri, which was ruined. So
really,
yeah, Rancho Lulu's Rancho 1 Ford Capri of a stranger nil. But yeah, so there we go.
Gosh, the internet just gets better and better and better.
You see, when people say it's evil and bad, sometimes the internet is a force for good. And in this case, it's just furthering the sum total of our Rancho knowledge.
Lulu, Scottish smouldering lady singer who did a thing once with Take That, head-on crashed a Matra Rancho when it was new. Gosh. Well, maybe we should get back to the chat about the Goldie looking chain. Another,
You're
a foreign listener, another obscure.
Well, you say this, but I've seen at least two, maybe three comments on YouTube or things on Twitter from Americans going, I know who Fred Dibner is. So, he's not totally alien to people overseas.
Okay, all right. Well,
Goldie looking chain might be pushing it, but I want to hear this story nonetheless.
Okay, so the Goldie looking chain story is when I worked on the Max Power magazine, I had an idea to build them a car and gift it to them. They just come out, I think 2003, I'm going to say maybe. Yeah, maybe 2003. And this has all come back to light since the video that I put up on my own YouTube channel, Car Pervert, in the background where I'm Zoom calling Charlie Borman about electric motorbikes. There's a gold disc on the wall of my really scraggy, untidy office, and it's a gold disc that I got given by the manager of the Goldie Looking Chain.
Oh.
And it's the one and only gold disc I'm probably ever going to have. And it says, presented to Johnny Smith to recognise the sales in the United Kingdom of more than 100,000 copies of Greatest Hits, Goldie Looking Chain, Atlantic Records, 2004. So the reason why I got this, we decided to build the Goldie Looking Chain a car and gift it to them for a feature. And I spoke to their management and they were like, yeah, that'd be great. Keep it a total secret. I said, yeah, cool, we can do that. And I had it. I got a company to donate a trade-in Vauxhall Cavalier in Birmingham. We made sure it was MOT'd and taxed, and then I got some professional graffiti artists in Birmingham to paint it. And we did it in the Burberry check.
I remember this.
Yeah,
yes.
You do, and we nicknamed it the Chavalier.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cav then came back to us at Max Power. We fitted some neons to it, a bad spoiler, and we recovered the seats with shell suits. So all of the seats had shell suit tops and their necklaces around their headrests. And it had a numerous other bad accessories. So I then drove it to Nottingham to meet the band and give it to them, and we did a shoot with them. And I met the tour manager, I think, there. They were doing a gig that night, which I went to in Nottingham Rock City. And it was hilarious. Well, when we gifted them the car, they were really excited. And they posed for a bit for the static pictures, but they immediately just wanted to get in the car. They got in the car and they just drove off flat out before we'd even had a chance to sort of discuss insurance or anything. And they, I was really panicking because I thought it was going to all end quite badly. It didn't, though. Then when they got the car back, they said, listen, we really want to use this for our new single promotion in London in about 3 weeks. Could you bring it down to London? I said, yeah. So I drove it home. We did that. We processed that shoot. I wrote the feature. Then met them in London a month later, drove it down to central London where they were promoting their single Your Mother's Got a Penis. You might remember it. Great song. I think it samples an Eric Clapton song in it.
Does it?
Yeah, I think it does.
Dear Eric, we would like to sample one of your excellent records in our new track. Please give your permission. Hello, Eric Clapton here. Can I just ask, what's the track called? Well, it's called Your Mother's Got a Penis. Sold.
So then, the car, I get down there to the rendezvous point, and it is mobbed. There are dozens and dozens and dozens of people all wearing tracksuits, and there's a whole team of roller skating girls wearing Burberry, and there's a Bedford Rascal little van, you know, or a Daihatsu Hijet, one of those types that's painted like the A-Team van.
Right.
And the Goldie-looking chain turn up, and I'm in the Chevalier, and we do this procession with huge, I think it might have been the A-Team van, had a PA system on the roof playing their new single, and we just roadblocked major parts of London at about 10 miles an hour as a procession. It was really good, really successful. Then when it all finished, I had the manager of the band in the car with me, and they said, could you drive us back to Atlantic Records? I said, yeah, no problem. We were driving, and I'm pretty sure I wrote it down. It was Pall Mall. And as we were driving down Pall Mall, we stopped at, because a lady was crossing the road. There was a car in front of us that had already stopped. And I'm telling you all this information because in a van, little did we know, behind us ran a red light and was looking in the opposite direction, not paying attention, and didn't even hit the brakes, and went straight into the back of me in the Goldie looking chains Chevalier, which then went straight into the car in front, which nearly pushed into the lady who was crossing the road. I remember vividly hitting the steering wheel with my head because I don't think the seatbelt retracted properly. The manager of the car nutted the dashboard in the passenger seat. We both kind of went, are you all right? Yeah, I'm fine. The sound was terrific. Got out the car, and the boot of this Cavalier, which was a saloon, was vertical in the air rather than being horizontal, with all the lights and all of the rear end was just pointing completely at the sky. It was like a hockey stick shape. It was amazing. The guy in the van was apologetic, so we called the police, got all that sorted out. We got the car recovered back. I got it recovered back to the car park of EMAP Publishers where I worked. I did have quite a bad concussion actually that day. And but the best bit was that the car still worked. I started it up the week after and it still ran and drove just fine. So I took it around the corner for a pub lunch and it still, even the brake lights still worked. It was amazing. Even though they were pointing at sort of the wrong direction, it all still worked. So the car, and also the car, because of the crash of the car, we made the news twice. So the whole Your Mother's Got a Penis kind of PR stunt got some column inches, but then the Sun got wind of the fact that the car had got written off on Pall Mall, and the manager took some photos, and I think he must have given them to the Sun, and so the Sun ran the whole thing about the Goldie looking chains Chevalier getting destroyed. And then of course the car, then my editor, which I've probably mentioned this to you before, my editor gets a call a week or two later from Burberry's lawyers with strict instructions to destroy the car, otherwise there's going to be some suing going on. So I had to chaperone the car to a scrapyard, and I had to video it being picked up by a crane and crushed. And
oh, no.
Yeah, but before I did that, what I did was, this was the days of handy cams. There was no YouTube then. We decided to see how long the engine would last in the Chevalier. So I did a... I got the camera rolling, and I got in the car having not touched it for a week, and started it with, you're going to hate this, with my foot flat on the throttle. I chopped the throttle down on the limiter, and we just sat there and just waited to see what would happen. And after about 10 minutes of just nothing but we noticed there was fire under the car, and all it had done is set fire to all the exhaust rubber hangers, because the exhaust was starting to glow.
Oh my god.
But the engine wouldn't die. So it still didn't die when we took it to the scrapyard. So there's the story.
Well, now I've just searched for Goldie Looking Chain Burberry car, and what comes up here on Shutterstock, the photo library.
Yeah.
A photo titled Chav Rally Organised by Goldie Looking Chain, London, Britain, 25th of October 2004. It's a photo of this Burberry painted Cavalier with a load of women sitting on the bonnet. They've got short skirts on and roller skates. That's remember this?
Yeah, there was a whole procession of them with the skates.
And GLC t-shirts on. There's some more on the roof. And there's a load of people standing behind the car with sort of fake protest signs.
That's right, which says just random stuff.
Random sort of GLC lyrics. But in the driver's seat of the car, leaning out of the window, I think sort of trying to flick the V's and pulling a very strange face, is you.
Well, I can neither confirm or deny without saying.
I mean, it's a younger version of you. People might not immediately clock it as you.
Well, it was 16 years ago.
16 years ago. So, yeah, I'm going to say that scientifically speaking, you were definitely younger 16 years ago than
did
you
I
are
have,
now.
I had silly spiky hair and a goatee beard.
You got quite a thin sort of Beppe DiMarco style goatee beard, yeah.
Yeah, and, yeah, that's me. That's me.
And I think you're flicking the V's. Or you're just doing a kind of gang sign. I can't really tell, but
what did you type in? Goldie Looking Chain.
I typed in Goldie Looking Chain Burberry car. There's quite a few pictures come up. Most of them are the band. I can't believe the car got crushed, because actually you got some use out of it before that, though, because there's quite a few pictures of it with the band in different places.
We tried to obviously get quite a lot of use out of it, and it was a really cool PR stunt. I mean, obviously we did the Max Power feature with it. The guys who did the graffiti, I've got this picture up now. At the rally.
Hey, Joe, there's another one on Getty Images as well.
Is there?
Yeah, this was on Oxford Street. You did this.
Yeah, we were right in the centre of town.
And you're just on the Getty one. It's a different photo, same setup, but it's a different photographer because the angle's different, and the women on the car are pulling slightly different aggressive faces and gestures, and you're just in shot pulling another face.
I'm just being, well, because in the Max Power era, you had to always be overly expressive with your facial expressions. That was because, of course, it was all still photos. There was no videos, really, for good and for bad. So, that is weird, isn't it? Yeah,
there's actually quite a lot of photos of this car.
So it exists. Yeah. It exists.
Considering
it had a short
life.
But infamous.
That's amazing that you had to have it crushed there.
Bless that car. I had a lot of fun with that car in its short... The drive back from Nottingham was a fun one, I remember. Because obviously people looked.
If I had a pound for every time I'd heard the phrase, the drive back from Nottingham was a fun one, I'd be a millionaire. But... Anyway, this is probably a good time to wrap things up. I'm glad we got that story, though, because I was waiting for that one, and also some closure on the cryptic text message about Airwolf TVR Man, which has now been satisfactorily answered.
Was it satisfactory?
Then some.
It was, actually,
because it's not what I expected, and that's always a delight. So, yeah, cheers for that. Anyway, thank you, as always, for listening to Smith & Sniff the podcast. Please do like and subscribe, and then like again, just to make sure. Also, I have three pieces of information to share with you. One, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel called Car Pervert with lots of excellent videos featuring him on there. Go and check out Charlie Borman and the Electric Motorcycle, for example. Number two, I still have a book out called The Medium-Sized Book of Boring Car Trivia by Sniff Petrol, which is available exclusively on Amazon. And three, the only street in Britain where you can drive on the right is Savoy Court, outside the Savoy Hotel in London.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's because it's more logical to go in that way. And also, in the old days, it meant that the door of a carriage where a lady would be sitting would be nearest to the door of the hotel, allowing elegant egress straight into the premises. Also, although it is the only street where you drive on the right, it is technically a private road, so it's not breaking UK law. But it looks like a real street because it has double yellow lines and all sorts on it.
I thought we were going to have an argument about Opel Capitans and whether or not captain or not.
You don't believe me that Capitan is captain in German, so that car is called, well,
it's not.
That car is called the Opel Capitan, but in Britain it would be the Vauxhall Captain. Such a thing.
I just love, would anyone drive a car that's called the Captain? It just sounds.
Well, there was the Opel Commodore as well. I mean, they were quite into their.
Oh, of course,
ranks.
And the Senator.
And
what
the Admiral.
Were we talking about?
So,
was the Admiral?
Yeah.
Admiral?
Yeah.
Was there
all of those
Sir
things.
Opal Admiral?
Cadet as well.
But that doesn't sound so bad for some reason.
Because it's spelt the German way. That's why. This is my point.
Capitan isn't
spelt the German way.
I'm going to look it up. The Capitan isn't German in captain in German, I'm pretty sure. I just don't think
we'll
it is.
We'll come back to this next week once we've found some way in the world of looking up what foreign words mean. If only such thing existed. Until then, thank you for listening. Bye.
Goodbye.
Well, it's called Your Mother's Got a Penis.